Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Lou Salmonfink, Executive Director of the Cargo Systems Program Office at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Also joining us in our conversation is Alan Heath, partner in IBM's Customs and Border Protection Services Group. Lou, I want to go back to our discussion on e-manifests, if you will. With the use of e-manifests currently at a relatively low percentage of the total number of manifests filed, could you tell us how is CBP going to handle a sudden influx that requires 100% of manifests to be filed electronically at the ACE ports?
Well, I would say that it's not really a relatively low percentage anymore. We've gone up over the last year from perhaps getting 1,000 or 2,000 manifests a month to probably close to 60,000 to 70,000 manifests per week at this point right now. The reason that's happened is because we've said that folks have to participate. When we rolled out this e-manifest process, we told the trade community, all right, it's something new. We're going to put it out there, start deploying it at the ports. We'd like you to give it a try, see how it works so we can get any bugs out of it. And frankly, a lot of folks didn't jump on board. And I think the reason for that was that the Customs Service was giving them pretty good service at the ports. You know, they had to make an investment to participate in e-manifest. And we had a few early adopters. We ran a lot of bugs out of the system, and that was great. What we've done in the last year is put out, based upon the Trade Act, regulations that say, all right, everybody, we told you that it was optional, but now it's mandatory. For example, right now in the states of Arizona, Washington, and parts of North Dakota, a truck arriving that has not pre-filed an electronic manifest will be turned around at the border and not allowed to come into the United States, which is the ultimate punishment, I think, for a trucker because he wants to deliver that cargo. So we still have a ways to go. 75,000 manifests a week is a lot less than we have to get to. We probably have to get to 300,000 to 400,000 per week if I was to guess a number. So maybe we're getting close to 25%. And what's great about the way we're rolling it out and implementing it in stages is that we can make sure that the system can handle that volume as it goes forward. We did a lot of checks. And if we get to a point where we move forward and the system can't handle that volume, well, we'll just stop our implementation plan, do whatever we have to do to the system to get it forward. But I'm confident that it's going to work, it's going to work well, and that we're going to start saving time. In fact, we're already seeing some crossings experience 15 to 20-second decreases in the time it takes to process a truck in primary because our officers are no longer swiping light pens across documents. They're not handling pieces of paper. By the bang of a license plate or perhaps from an RFID tag on a truck, information is popping up on their screens with one mouse click, literally. If there's nothing to be concerned with on that load, they can let something proceed down the road and into the commerce.
Hey, Lou, could you elaborate on some of the outreach efforts that you're using to inform and encourage the use of e-manifest?
Yeah, we're doing a ton of outreach. And in fact, we're doing something called an ACE exchange. We'll be in Laredo. We'll be in Buffalo. We've been in Tucson. We've been in Detroit. And we've met with truckers in all those locations. We've met with importers, brokers, all members of the importing community that deal with truck manifest. We've done national radio broadcasts to get information out. We've done lots of media outreach. We have trucking company representatives that are baked into our development plans. We have a couple that we call ACE ambassadors. In fact, not just with trucks, but across industry, we have about 25 to 30 trade members that we call trade ambassadors. These individuals actually underwent background checks as a federal employee would to make sure that they could get really involved in our requirements development. Well, it's bringing in experts from the trucking industry like that that's allowed us to build a system that will actually work. And I don't have a number here to give you, but I would say that probably close to 100 different individual conferences have occurred around both countries. In fact, not just in the United States, but also in Mexico and Canada, free events where individuals can come and get information about using Truck Manifest. There is an online free training syllabus that one can do in both English and Spanish that will show you how to fill out an ACE portal and so forth. And we're going to keep doing this. I just had a letter the other day from the Border Trade Alliance along the southwest border and Maria Luisa O'Connell, who is their president. We had a meeting with her, and she had some concerns about the outreach that we were doing in Spanish for the southwest border and for a lot of the Mexican firms that we're going to have to be complying with Truck Manifest. So she's going to help us figure out the best place to go for more outreach events.
Lou, to what extent does the success of the ACE program and the overall CBP modernization effort rely on input from the trade and transportation community?
It relies heavily on it. I talked before about stakeholder management, and it's very important because I'm working I see myself as a customs officer, that whatever we build meets the needs of the federal government. But all the information that we receive in advance electronically that we have been for 22 years, but now post 9/11 takes on a whole new role. What is on that conveyance? Who is sending what to whom? That information is critical to national security. And because of that, it's imperative that the people that we're receiving that information from, and those are importers, carriers, and so forth, that that information be accurate, that they can provide us that information in such a way that it does not hinder their ability to move cargo into and out of this country and so forth, to make sure that we have their requirements identified and to make sure that as ACE is fielded and built in stages over the coming years, we've developed a trade support network. It's got about 300 members from the trade community in it. It's broken into a variety of committees that look at things from vessel manifests to legal policy issues to deployment issues to issues that have to deal with participating government agencies and so forth. We have committee meetings throughout the year. We have plenary sessions where we gather everybody together for a couple times a year. And we rely heavily on those individuals that are on those committees, those trade members, to look at us and say, you know, you guys are out of your minds if you do it that way. And, you know, I'll tell you something, Alan. Many times they have solutions that we didn't even think of. And those solutions help us achieve our mission and at the same time ensure that, going back to, I guess, the first thing I said, you know, preventing the entry of terrorists and their weapons, but at the same time facilitating legitimate trade and travel. They're helping us achieve that objective, giving us accurate upfront information that we can rely upon, while at the same time not slowing down the movement of those goods.
Lou, I want to turn this topic of outreach around for a moment. Given the large-scale transformation that's being created by the ACE program, can you tell us about your internal CBP outreach strategy and any formal training programs available to educate CBP employees about ACE?
Right now, we actually have a lot of field people in that are looking at our next delivery of ACE that's coming up in August of this year, where we're going to have all of our import specialists and some of our entry officers, perhaps 1,000-plus employees, actually starting to use ACE for various parts of their job. And what we've done is after we've built this thing and we've got it in a state where they can come in and actually take a look at it and one of the development phases that it's in, we bring these folks in to show it to them to get their opinions on it to see if we've once again hit the mark. The training that we're doing is we have internal stakeholder conferences, for example, on the e-manifest rollout. We've gotten together on several occasions with field supervisors to make sure that we've taught them and discussed with them all of the issues that they're facing with the system. We have weekly phone calls that are doing outreach to the land borders to make sure that the officers that are out there using the system, if they have questions and problems, they can get their questions answered. We have a 7x24 help desk where folks from inside customs can call, and if there's a problem, it could be as simple as I forgot how to sign on, or I forgot my password, or it could be more complicated. The system isn't doing what you told me it was going to do. What's wrong with this? And we open up work tickets and so forth. We have field advisory committees from the field that we use to not only help us understand what the system is, but give us advice on how to train people. You know, any organization like Customs is always introducing new things that people have to do. An automated system is just one of those tools. And reaching out to the supervisors out there that are using the various systems and so forth to get their buy-in is important. There's web-based classroom training that we're going to be offering. As we deploy parts of the system, we've developed a field readiness network. Our next, again, release of ACE in August, we've established and reached out in advance to all of the field offices that we have that are going to be using the system. There's 20 field offices. Within each of those field offices, we've developed a cadre of field readiness coordinators that we can reach out to make sure that the proper computer terminals, if we had to upgrade them, have been installed, to make sure that the individuals that are going to be using the system have had the requisite classroom training, or have available to them a super user that's been assigned to give them some hands-on training.
To stay with this topic of an internal view of the program, performance and accountability frameworks are important for ensuring that promised capabilities and benefits are being delivered on time and within budget. Could you elaborate on the ACE program's established accountability framework, and how does the program measure its progress and performance against these established commitments?
The accountability framework, it's interesting. There was a – when I first got into this position, the Government Accountability Office, we have tons of oversight on this. And sometimes you get frustrated by it because everybody's kind of looking over your shoulder. But on the other side of the coin, I at the end of the day find it reassuring because it's great having another set of eyes looking at things. And if you're doing something really dumb, they say, hey, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. One of the findings that the Government Accountability Office came out with was that – and they recommended that we create an accountability framework so that me as the manager of the program could do a better job. And I remember sitting down talking to a few representatives from the GAO and asking them, hey, can you tell me, you know, what do you mean by this? What is it talking about? And it was through those discussions that it really came to me that, you know, for each one of these chunks of ACE that we're building, there are certain key things that I need to know, and I need to know them on a daily basis. I have to be able to pull that information up immediately as I need it. I need to understand the capabilities that we're building in each one of those releases. And while that doesn't necessarily change a lot, especially as we get towards release, it's important that it be there. I have to understand what this thing is costing me. Now, the Office of Management and Budget has mandated that programs use earned value measurement. And I'm not going to talk to your listeners here and certainly bore them to tears with earned value measurement. But essentially, in my mind, the way I look at it is, hey, I said I was going to spend this amount of money, and as I'm spending that money, it actually measures how much money I've spent on the work that's actually being done. And I can compare that to what was budgeted, and if I see those lines going the wrong way, I can take early action and find out what's wrong, keep things within budget. This accountability framework, in addition to keeping those capabilities on the forefront so that I understand what I'm building, we use earned value management to make sure that we're hitting those promised benefits. Schedule is always a challenge. You know, we estimate a year and a half from now, oh, we're going to deliver such and such in 2008. And I'll tell you, between now and 2008, a lot of things can change. The accountability framework has to take into account schedule. Risk. We've got things that we've identified that we're concerned about. You mentioned a few of them before. Training. Are our officers ready to receive this information? Scope. Somebody came in from the Hill and said, hey, you know, we want you to do things like this now. We want you to get additional advanced information to enhance national security and so forth. We have to identify those risks and build them into this framework so that as we're deciding if we're on target and doing what we have to do, that those risks are being properly mitigated. You know, what is the benefit of what we're doing? What is the mission value? Are we going to process trucks quicker? Are we going to bounce more information off of our terrorist watch lists? Are we going to protect the revenue better? Are we going to enforce the rules of other participating agencies, other federal agencies in a better manner? We have to keep that mission value and that benefit up there so that we keep driving towards what we said we were going to do. And then finally, measures. Are we actually doing what we said we were going to do? We said we were going to clear or process more and more duties and fees via periodic monthly statement. Well, what were your goals? And you set them out there. And are you tracking those as you move forward? That's what the accountability framework is. It's kind of a fancy name for a management tool that allows me to not have to go through 50 PowerPoint slides, but have on one or two pieces of paper a high-level snapshot of a specific ACE release and also a program-level release to make sure that we're hitting the basic scope, schedule, and cost of our program.
That's fantastic. Going back to this theme of collaboration, could you elaborate on the International Trade Data Systems, or otherwise known as ITDS? How does this enable the expansion of ACE participation among other border enforcement agencies and ensure a coordinated cargo security strategy?
ITDS is really a misnomer, and when folks hear that, they say, well, you're talking about the automated commercial environment, and now you're talking about the International Trade Data System. Sounds like a couple of different systems. At one time, the International Trade Data System, or ITDS, was a separate system. It was over at the Department of Treasury in the late 90s, and it never really got done over there. There was a lot of discussion, a lot of things about what it should be, and now it's really a part of ACE. ACE is the system that Customs and Border Protection is building, that the Department of Homeland Security is building, that is going to be the platform for import-export activity in this country as far as all federal agencies are concerned. And essentially, I think it was about last fall, the Congress passed the Safe Port Act, Security and Accountability for Every Port Act. And that act mandated that any federal agency that was involved or had a mission with import-export activity into the or out of the United States needed to participate in this ITDS thing that we're talking about. Well, there's a concept that's known as single window. And I think the best way to look at this is from the perspective – well, two perspectives. One would be the trader. If you're somebody that's importing something into the United States, let's say it's a food product. Well, you need to give customs information so that we can collect duties, taxes, and fees, and so forth and so on. But if it's a food product, you probably also have to give something to the Food and Drug Administration. They have rules and regulations. They want to make sure that the food is safe and so forth and so on. And it's not uncommon for a lot of imports to have regulations that apply to those commodities across the whole range of federal agencies. Environmental Protection Agency is another one, a good one as far as hazardous materials are concerned. Well, what as a trader, you wouldn't want to do is say, hey, customs build ACE and I'm going to give them their information here and, oh, Food and Drug built another system. Great. I'll send the information they need over here and, oh, EPA has this and so forth. The goal here is to create this single window. Through ACE, Traders are going to be able to send us the information they need to the federal government, to the entire federal government that says, here's my shipment of food, Customs, and here's all the information I know about it, and I'm going to give it to ACE. ACE will take that information and segment off that stuff that the Food and Drug Administration needs and send it to them. Now, right now, with our truck manifest system, we're doing this with the Department of Transportation, specifically the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, responsible for truck safety in the country. And we're collecting a lot of valuable information for them that we're currently passing to them so that they can support their mission. Things like, are trucks properly insured? Are drivers properly licensed? If it's a hazardous material truck, has it got the right driver behind that wheel? Great idea of sharing information. So instead of saying to truckers coming in, hey, send Customs this, and by the way, you have another system you have to comply with, these guys in DOT, it's one thing coming in. And that's it. That's the vision of the single window. Now, two perspectives. I'll give you the other perspective, that of a customs officer standing in that primary booth on the land borders. Cargo comes in. He looks at it, and he says, oh, here's a shipment of food. The goal is to have that result come back to him when he looks at that computer screen and say, hey, as far as customs is concerned, don't worry about it. We have an entry, that thing I referred to before. That means we're going to get our duties, taxes, and fees. And, oh, look, the trader has also told the Food and Drug Administration all about it. And there it is. There's your response from Food and Drug that says, good to go. Don't worry about it, officer. That way, our officer, who is responsible for knowing literally the rules and regulations of dozens of different federal agencies, can relax and know that as far as Food and Drug and trade compliance is concerned, that requirement has been built, has been met. And then going back to a point I made earlier about security and efficiency, because that information is being taken care of and collected and put in front of our officer so that he can understand it, he can spend time asking questions of that truck driver, looking at the conveyance, thinking about his environment. He can spend time doing his job that he's been trained for and not worry about, did I get this piece of paper, did I get this, did I get that? Oh, look, there it all is. It's there. It's electronic. It's in advance. Thank you. And he can do all the things that the computer doesn't do because the computer can't do it all. There's a human factor there, and that human factor is very important in the equation.
So this is as much about security as it is about facilitating trade.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's about security, and it's also about helping those federal agencies meet their mission requirements. The Department of Transportation is all excited about collecting information from us. They're going to be opening up the southwest border at some point, I think, for Mexican drivers doing long haul in the United States. It's a controversial issue for some folks. Customs being able to give them electronic information about everything that's coming into this country and those arriving conveyances is going to help the Department of Transportation ensure that what's happening is according to their regulations.
Fantastic. What does the future hold for CBP's automated commercial environment and its overall modernization effort? We will ask Lou Salmon-Fink, Executive Director of the Cargo Systems Program Office at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.